This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Abraham Galloway was born into slavery and quickly became a legend of his time. He was a man who ran away from his master, turned into a radical abolitionist, a Union spy, and a state senator. Galloway's revolutionary leadership shines a light on the way African Americans worked for their own liberation. And yet this powerful historical figure remains relatively unknown. Well, remained unknown until now. Abraham Galloway caught David Soselsky's eye. David's an author and historian from Eastern North Carolina and joins us today to talk about his new book, The Fire of Freedom, Abraham Galloway and the Slaves, Civil War. David, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How'd you find out about Abraham Galloway?
Galloway kind of leaps off the pages of the old documents that describe North Carolina during the Civil War and slavery. I was doing other research, and I kept running across diary entries and military records and letters home about this phenomenal, very young former slave named Galloway, who was infiltrating enemy lines, was going deep into Confederate territory to doing everything he could to destroy the Confederacy. But also, at one moment, he rescues his mother, his slave mother, from slavery during the war. He's working closely with Union generals. He's fighting the Union and racism in the Union. In some cases, it seems as hard as he is trying to destroy the Confederacy. During the war, he gets this almost larger-than-life, I don't know, reputation on both sides. Confederates fear him. The Union mostly loves him when he's letting them alone. And for a long time, I didn't know what to make of him. I mean, he's not in the history books. And eventually, I asked myself, well, who is this guy? And I began to do the research to try to figure out who he was, but also to figure out a view of the Civil War that was different than the one I was taught, and in which he would make, in a way, intellectual sense. How do you make sense of this man who can click his fingers and have thousands of African-American slaves organized and moving into Union lines, which is one of the things that happened?
Well, maybe one story that really illustrates this, I think, for a surprising role that African-Americans played in their own liberation is his meeting with Edward Kinsley.
Sure. That happens in May of 1863, so the third year of the Civil War has just started. It happens in New Bern, North Carolina, near where I grew up. And Kinsley has come south as an emissary of the governor of Massachusetts to organize one of the first regiments of former slaves to fight in the war. He has gotten petitions from African Americans in New Bern. Hundreds and hundreds of African American men have signed petitions saying that they want to fight in the war for their own freedom. Lincoln has just made it possible that they can do this. But when he gets there, when Kinsley gets there, he expects African Americans to throng to the army's ranks, and instead hardly anybody comes into the recruiting office. And he doesn't know it at first, but what's happened is that the Union Army has occupied New Bern and this little sliver of the North Carolina coast for a year by that time, and the Union Army's treatment of the former slaves has been so atrocious, so blatantly racist, and they're also just frankly disappointed that President Lincoln and the Lincoln administration haven't stood up more for African-American political rights. So they're not just happy to be there any longer. They've become a third force in the war. They're not North or South. It's an independent African-American political movement that's happening in eastern North Carolina. And when Kinsley get there, they won't just sign up. Eventually, so he goes around and says, what do I have to do? What can I possibly do to make African-Americans join the army? And everybody says, you have to see Galloway. He talks to white officers. He talks to African-American leaders. You've got to see Galloway. Eventually, Galloway consents to see him. An African-American political activist, a former slave named Mary Ann Starkey, approaches Kinsley and says, I want to talk to you. Come to my house at midnight. Kinsley gets there that night at midnight. He's ushered upstairs into the attic eaves. Kinsley walks in, and there's a long line of armed African-American men down both sides of the room. it's dark except there's a desk with a candle and a Bible, and on the other side is Abraham Galloway. Galloway at that point is 26 years old, and he's the leader of an African-American political movement that stretches through the Union-occupied territory, but even into the Confederacy behind enemy lines. And he says, this is what you have to do to get us to join the army. Equal pay. You have to treat us. You know, our women want to do their part in bringing down the Confederacy. They want roles in this. If our men are captured, we want to be assurances they're going to be treated as prisoners of war, not executed or returned to slavery. And that night, they work out the terms under which African Americans in New Bern will fight in the army. Galloway goes back behind enemy lines for 5 or 6 days. At the end of those 5 or 6 days, they're on the western part of New Bern, and at midnight, and Union pickets start to see lights coming out of the distance. An estimated 4,000 African-American men, women, and children come into Union lines in a single night. The brigade, hundreds join the next day. The brigade is eventually organized. Somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 African-Americans join the Union Army in New Bern, in and around New Bern, over the next 2 years.
What a shock this must have been to Kinsley. We're coming down to help you folks. We're organized. We got this army. Just sign up here. And then finds out that this group of people are, in particular under Galloway, are organized. They're ready to go. And they're going to make demands before they participate in what they now see as, frankly, the white people's war, even though...
Exactly. You know, they're politically sophisticated. You're not that you can't do something like that if you weren't organized, even under slavery. These people were already had a vision of where they want to go. They're organized, and it's one that is more. They come in to that moment with a political vision that's in a way more ardently democratic, more revolutionary than any of the abolitionists in the North. And the center of the abolitionist movement at that moment shifts to African Americans in the South.
Where did this come from? Where did this sense of this revolutionary idea of what true democracy should be, where did you learn this had emerged, and how did Galloway come to these understandings?
That sense emerged from out of the African-American experience, particularly in southern ports, places like Wilmington and Beaufort in North Carolina, but in Charleston and Norfolk and New Orleans, where African Americans who were enslaved had the ability to experience slavery and learned a lot about how they don't want the world to be. They saw American democracy as it treated them at that time, but they also had access by shipping and trade routes and commerce to a broader world that connected them to anti-slavery movements in New England and Haiti and Britain. And Galloway is very much a child of that culture. He grew up in a very small fishing and piloting village south of Wilmington, but it was one that was not an isolated, ignorant, or I mean, it was a politically right. sophisticated place. And they had a chance to build this very powerful vision of a different kind of America. And
it was well communicated north and south.
Oh, completely. Yeah. They're writing letters even during slavery amongst each other all over the South, and to African Americans in the North. Some of them are traveled. Some of Galloway's colleagues during the Civil War were slaves who were taking New York and Washington, D.C. newspapers while they were still slaves. This was a sophisticated crowd.
Well, give us a rough sketch now of his own biography, Cradle to Grave.
Well, very quickly, he's born in 1837 in what's now Southport, North Carolina, down below Wilmington. He escapes in the hold of a ship in 1857 when he's 20 years old. He goes north, and he's immediately involved in, well, I guess, what I would consider the darkest, most radical part of the anti-slavery movement, the John Brown crowd and people like that, running slaves out of Ohio to the north. He's even involved in a movement, what they call the Second John Brown, to attack the American South from a base in Haiti. While he's in Haiti, the Civil War starts, and a very small group of abolitionists inside the Union Army recognize how desperately they need military intelligence inside the South, inside the Confederacy. And who better than somebody like Abraham Galloway, a man that was from the South, could disappear into the slave communities of the South, but also had this experience with the dark side of the of the abolitionist movement. Galloway is in, has infiltrated the South and working with slave communities. And by the at the very beginning of the war, he eventually works as a Union spy in at least Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, and all the way to Louisiana and Mississippi. He's eventually disillusioned by the Union Army's treatment of African Americans. And when he's back in North Carolina, he becomes part of this broader African American political movement that's based in eastern North Carolina. They build their own institutions, their own churches, their own schools, their own black militia. As the war moves forward, they want to carry that vision and what they're doing to the rest of the country. Galloway meets with Galloway leads a delegation to President Lincoln in 1864. He represents the state in the South at the National Convention of, I think it's called National Convention of Colored Men in 1864 in New York. He tours the northern states twice during the Civil War, advocating for political rights as the primary goal, that emancipation is not enough. African Americans need full rights as American citizens. After the at the very end of the war, he organizes the founds the first civil rights groups in American history below the Mason-Dixon line in eastern North Carolina. They're called Equal Rights Leagues. After the war, he organizes two landmark convention of freed people, the former slaves in North Carolina. First one's in New Bern, then in Raleigh. He is elected the leader of a black militia that fights the Ku Klux Klan. He's elected our first state senator, African-American state senator, in 1868. He dies in 1870, and he's 33 years old. His funeral, wow. One newspaper said that his funeral was the largest in the state's history up to that time.
Died at the age of 33. The story you tell, this story is remarkable for the insight it gives us into the revolutionary activities and action that African Americans took in their own behalf. I wonder, and the story's not not well told. You tell it very well. It hasn't been told until now, at least that I've seen.
No.
Does this story play a part in the civil rights movement, in a kind of real revolutionary spirit that comes from the people that talks about real change in America?
Oh, yes. This movement was at least as revolutionary as what came later in the civil rights era. And it was a vision. They came, Galloway, the instructive part to me, or the most instructive part about Galloway's story, is that to do the research, I had to follow a vein of documentary records that brought out this much larger story of the Civil War as a war of liberation for these people. And it was and they brought forth with that a vision that didn't simply include freedom or even equal rights for African Americans, but a more complete vision of a sense of humanity, of a more humane vision of how we in American society would deal with one another, how we would look out for the weak. He proposed the state's first constitutional amendment for women's suffrage. The central role of women, women in those equal rights leagues I mentioned, they were often 30-40% African-American women. This larger vision of what America could be is really the bigger story behind Galloway. Mm. He was the beloved, I hate to say it in a way, but their beloved child. Mm. But he was a child of that movement. And then civil rights activists in North Carolina later, and you know, in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, they drew on this. It wasn't in the history books. It wasn't in our textbooks or our museums. But people's grandmothers and grandfathers and great-grandmothers remembered these stories and remembered that whole revolutionary generation. And I think that did provide an inspiration and a model and
So we shouldn't be surprised when Martin Luther King expands the civil rights movement to include war and peace, that he sees as a piece of all connected with economic justice, racial justice, human rights, worker rights. When he goes into that field, we shouldn't be surprised because this story was active and alive in African-American communities.
That's right.
And the documentary evidence, the veins you followed then were not where was this evidence? Where did you find it? I think you mentioned diaries and newspapers.
Diaries, old military records, slave accounts of their own experiences here in North Carolina, church records. I believe it was close to, almost 60 archives scattered across the United States and four countries. Because of the difficulty of writing about somebody who never learned to read or write, who lived only 33 years, and who was a slave and not allowed to read and write for most of his life, I complained. I mean, I fussed. But the good side of that is that it forced me to work harder and pursue records, particularly firsthand African-American records that had some of them never seen by anyone before. And I wasn't always happy that I had to do that. But I think in the end, it helped me fill out this broader story of the Civil War as an African-American liberation movement, because that's what's in those documents. And if I had not had to, if I could have been lazier, maybe I would have read more, I don't know, old New York Times or something. And Galloway's there too. But when you read the African-American newspapers of the time or the diaries of the time, Galloway is front page news week after week after week.
It's a stunning book, David. Thank you for writing it, and thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
David Ciesielski, author and historian. The latest book, The Fire of Freedom, Abraham Galloway and the Slaves' Civil War. He's going to read at the Bellamy Mansion in Wilmington tomorrow, October 11th at 6:30 p.m. And he's also going to be in Durham Public Library November 4th at 3 o'clock. For more, visit uncpress.unc.edu. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.